On this week's edition of New York Now, Governor Andrew Cuomo has some harsh words for President Donald Trump after funding cuts are ordered for New York City.
Those who know him best like him least.
And the state has closed its first college after more than 300 students test positive. Marina Villeneuve from the Associated Press has details. Republicans in New York are hoping to win big this November. State Republican Chairman Nick Langworthy joins me to discuss. On the other side of the aisle, Zoran Mamdani is one of a handful of Democratic socialists joining the legislature next year. We'll speak about his plans for office. And we'll discuss the movement to cancel rent with Vito Signorelli from the Rent Stabilization Association. I'm Dan Clark, and this is New York Now.
Today, the Senate majority will pass legislation.
We will pass a law prohibiting it, and we will take them to court challenging it.
Another stand for New York and sending a message to the nation.
Welcome to this week's edition of New York Now. I'm Dan Clark. Two-thirds of New Yorkers don't want colleges to reopen for in-person learning this year. That's according to a new Siena poll this week. It's a little late for that. Colleges in New York started classes last week. And those who didn't want colleges to reopen this year had their worst fears confirmed at one campus. More than 300 students at SUNY Oneonta tested positive for the coronavirus just in the last week. Governor Cuomo said the state will continue to monitor the infection rate at campuses, but he also said he wasn't surprised by the spike in cases.
I believe colleges are the canary in the coal mine. I believe what you're seeing across the nation is going to continue. Where colleges open, students come back, congregate settings, socialization, the infection rate goes up.
So that was earlier in the week. Later in the week, the governor held a surprise conference call with reporters and called President Trump a clown, a joke, and the worst president in history for New York City. With me in studio to discuss is Marina Villeneuve from the Associated Press. Thanks so much for being here.
Of course.
So this call blew me away. It was Wednesday evening, 7:30 p.m. We got like 10 minutes notice of it, and we know when that happens that it's going to be important for the governor. And he comes on, and I think a lot of us knew that the president was threatening to cut funding for New York City because of the rise in crime. But then the governor just went into a series of personal attacks. What did you think?
Yeah, you know, I think it was definitely something a little bit more than we've heard from the governor in regards to the president. It was, you know, the governor was saying that if that the president couldn't have enough bodyguards if he were to go into New York City.
That was a really interesting comment.
Yeah.
And I think what he meant was like people would be shouting at him and jeering at him. But it came off as the governor saying that he was going to need like personal security protection from like harm if he went into New York City, mm-hmm. which got a lot of backlash in the tabloids, I think.
Yes. And I think, you know, the governor's spokesman later clarified that the governor was really talking about how he feels that the president abandoned New York in the pandemic and overall has left just a lot of responsibility to the states.
So listening to the call, you know, I'm reminded of March and April when the governor was basically praising the president because he had met with the president to get things like the medical naval ship to New York to handle hospitalizations and some temporary hospitals. This is very different. And what strikes me is we're at a time right now where the governor is trying to get federal funding for the state to the tune of $53 billion. How do you think this affects that? Are we going to see an impact on whether the state actually gets that money?
Yeah, right. And, you know, the governor definitely was saying at the beginning of the pandemic that he wanted to suspend any sort of personal grudge and any sort of issues with the president and the two, you know, were really trying to work together on getting ventilators and hospital beds. When it comes to the risk of federal funding, at this point, I don't think there's anything to suggest that federal funding really will get cut for New York, especially when it comes to, you know, federal funding for law enforcement grants. You know, that could be something that could definitely hurt New York City as it's trying to do everything from address the rise in shootings to allowing maybe indoor dining one day.
Right. And we had the attorney general say on Thursday that if the president did go forward with those cuts, that she would definitely be filing a lawsuit, which I'm not surprised about. Let's turn to the SUNY system because classes have only been in session for 2 weeks. SUNY Oneonta now has more than 300 cases. And That didn't strike me as a party school. I'm actually from that area, and I know that parties happen there, but I think of where I live now in Albany, where we have kids having parties every weekend on Hudson Avenue, just like ragers going. And I wonder if we're going to see the same thing in Albany. What's SUNY doing?
Yeah, you know, it seems like now SUNY has announced all these different measures to try to increase testing and make it a lot easier to do multiple tests at once and to do saliva tests. But, you know, it looks like most SUNY institutions and community colleges, they didn't require students to get tested.
Right.
Before they started going back to campus as of mid-August. And we've just started to see so many issues in a number of public universities and institutions sort of announce that they're suspending students.
Right. Well, we'll have to see how it turns out in the next few weeks as classes continue. Marina Villeneuve from the Associated Press, thanks so much.
Thank you.
So the political conventions are behind us, and candidates will now spend the next few months campaigning for office. That includes a lot of candidates right here in New York. Republicans are trying to take back the state Senate this year. You'll remember that Democrats won a firm majority in the Senate 2 years ago. And there's also a handful of competitive races for Congress, mostly upstate. I spoke with New York Republican Chairman Nick Langworthy about the party's strategy for reaching voters in New York. Chairman Langworthy, thanks so much for being here this week.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
So you were fresh off the RNC from last week. Obviously, it was the President Donald Trump show. I'm wondering if you have any advice for him for these swing states where voters might still be undecided. What message do you think the president should be sending those voters to get them to side with him at the polls in November?
Well, I will tell you that I believe that the RNC masterfully presented its case in the quality of the production. In the programming that we saw shows an expanded Republican Party. It shows, more inclusion than we've probably ever seen at an RNC. And I think that the way that the speeches were presented, I certainly wish I could have been there each and every night to watch everything in a packed arena. But obviously, with COVID-19, that's not the case. But this is boiling down to a safety and security election. Whether it's the safety of our families from COVID-19 or the safety of us from unrest that we see in our streets. That is what people are going to the polls this year to make their choice based on. The president's thrown all the assets of the federal government at the coronavirus crisis, but the unrest in the streets is inexcusable. And when people feel insecure in their homes and their neighborhoods and they fear for their children's safety, I think there's an unease. Now, you don't hear much about that on the other side. I see Joe Biden's kind of sheepishly condemned the violence, but this is something that people are watching on their television screens every single day. And they understand that we have to get things put back together and unite the country. So I believe that this is very helpful to President Trump in his agenda and his candidacy. And we're well on our way to getting this going in the right direction.
So this is obviously a really important election year here in New York. You have some really competitive races, both in Congress and the state Senate. In Congress, those races are looking like mostly upstate. We do have one over in Staten Island and Brooklyn, but most of those congressional races are upstate. And we also have these really competitive races in the state Senate. And I feel like that's really the meat of this election because Republicans lost control of the state Senate in 2018. They're now looking to get it back. Do you think that the president's safety and security message will resonate with voters voting for state Senate candidates, or do you think some candidates will have to adjust their message to meet the needs of their district?
Well, the issue of criminal justice looms so large over every race in the state of New York, and the leadership of the Democrat Party that runs the Senate, that runs the Assembly, and certainly sits in the governor's mansion, they slammed through a new criminal justice system for the state of New York, a revolving door criminal justice system that puts the cops in handcuffs and lets the criminals run free. And that's the bail and discovery reform that they're so proud of. And you are seeing in the terrible following to the tragedy in the murder of George Floyd, you saw rioting and looting and mayhem and anarchy in the streets of New York and to lesser extent in our upstate cities. That some of those same people that were arrested and immediately handed their appearance ticket, and then they went right back at it for nights 2, 3, 4, and 5. It's to the point where the police can't do their job appropriately. They cannot keep our neighborhoods and our families safe because they've had the tools taken away from them. That's going to be an issue that looms large over every state Senate district and every state assembly district and every congressional district where, you know, the Democratic incumbent either voted for that policy or, you know, stands with that bail and discovery reform. You know, you've got the rest of the country looking to New York and California saying, don't let us become like them, because they see what's happened here with these ultra liberal policies that have really gutted the opportunity for our law enforcement officials to do their job.
So what about other top issues? I'm thinking of these moderate Democrats who will go to the polls and they agree with the criminal justice changes. What other issues can you bring to them to convince them to vote Republican over Democrat at the ballot?
Well, I will say that I think a lot of people, it sounded great. And largely, that will be the issue of the day. I mean, the coronavirus is something that, you know, factors into our schools. I think schools are a huge issue here as we look to this election. You've got parents that want their kids to go back to school. They're getting a hybrid program in most places. God willing, you know, we're able to get kids back into school for a long time. But you've got a governor who is now threatening funding to those schools, saying that he's going to cut their budgets by 20-30%, or hold it in limbo, and, you know, do this this ultra power that he has usurped, and the state legislature won't take it back from him, allows him to treat the rest of the institutions in the state like marionettes in his little show. And I believe that our schools and our education will also be one of those issues, especially in suburban districts, where we have a lot of people willing to cross the aisle.
The governor has said that he has to make those cuts because the federal government isn't giving any money to the state to make up for the lost revenue because of the coronavirus. If the state is not going to get any federal aid, then how do you think the state should manage its finances to keep the education funding intact the way it is right now? Or do you also think it will depend on the federal government giving money to the state?
The federal government has put unprecedented resources into the state of New York, into the residents of the state of New York. We've had a stimulus. We've had, you know, tax relief. We've had unprecedented amounts of unemployment given. I mean, in New York's one of those states with an awful lot of citizens and gets an awful lot of that revenue. The problem with New York State is Andrew Cuomo was running a $6 to $7 billion deficit before we even knew the word coronavirus, because of his mismanagement of Medicaid. New York State wants to be all things to all people and pretend like, you know, the best things in life are free. They're not. There's no such thing as a free lunch. We give far too generous a benefit, which we spend more annually than Florida and Texas combined on the program of Medicaid. So his mismanagement over a decade has led to this deficit. Then we get a global pandemic, which crushes our economy and exacerbates Medicaid expense. And you wonder why you can't pay the bill. But him blaming the federal government for cuts to other parts of his operational budget is like me not paying my credit card bill and blaming you for it. I mean, that's not the world we live in. The federal government cannot pay everyone's bills. I mean, we can't live in a fairy tale existence that every, you know, dark blue state government that spends with reckless abandon deserves a massive bailout on the backs of the entire country.
All right. State Republican Chairman Nick Langworthy, thanks so much for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
On the very opposite side of the aisle, a handful of Democratic socialists will join the legislature next year after defeating some longtime incumbents in the primary. Those races were in areas of New York City where Republicans don't get a lot of support, so whoever wins the primary is presumed to be the winner in November as well. Zohran Mamdani won his primary in June to represent parts of Queens in the Assembly, and he's got big plans for when he comes to Albany next year. We spoke earlier this week. Zohran Mamdani, thanks so much for being on New York Now this week.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely, anytime. So you're one of a handful of Democratic socialists who will be joining the legislature next year. Technically, you haven't won your election yet in November, but you're in a district in Queens where a Republican just is not going to gain the support to win. I know that all of you have your own priorities, but tell me what's at the top of your list when you come up to Albany next year.
Number one for me is housing. I am a former foreclosure prevention housing counselor. I would work with low to moderate income immigrant families across Queens facing eviction from their longtime family homes. I'm also a tenant here in Astoria, and we built our entire campaign really around the foundation of housing. Because even before this pandemic hit, we were in the midst of a housing crisis. In Astoria, about a quarter of all Astoria tenants are paying more than half of their income to their rent. And what we need to do is pass good cause eviction, which is a piece of legislation that was proposed by State Senator Julia Salazar that would create the framework for universal rent control in New York State.
So as I said, you're a self-identified Democratic Socialist, and I feel like for some people there's a negative connotation involved with that. Tell me what it means for you to be a Democratic Socialist and what you say to people who don't agree with that or just may not understand the concept.
I think that a lot of people who are against it is because we might not have had the best branding. And I think that for a long time, we've allowed ourselves to be defined by others. And I think now is the time for us to define ourselves. And for me, you know, when you ask, what does it mean to be a democratic socialist? For me, it means to be fighting for a society in which dignity is guaranteed to each and every member of this place. And I believe that the state should play a critical role in the distribution of that dignity and the ensuring that that dignity is actually received, right? So what I mean by that is so often here in New York City, in New York State, we have a system whereby the market is allowed to be the major determinant of the distribution of dignity. And, you know, we see that whether it's regards to healthcare, whether it's regards to housing, whether it's regards to childcare. I mean, there's so many different ways. And right now, in the midst of this pandemic, we are understanding that to be a socialist, to fight for dignity, it's more than just the big three, which are housing, healthcare, and education. We have to think about the ways in which people live their lives. So right now, can you live a dignified life without internet? Can you live a dignified life without childcare? These are the kinds of questions we need to be asking, and these are the kinds of answers we need to be creating, because there are too many people in New York City and state who are left at the mercy of the market, and they're being priced out of their own lives.
So when Republicans hear the words democratic socialism, I feel like they associate it with raising taxes to fund certain services and programs like Medicare for All, stronger public housing, essential services, community needs, things like that. Tell me how we could provide these services without raising taxes, because I feel like that's a question on everyone's minds.
I do want to raise taxes. I think that first and foremost, there are many taxes to be raised on the many, many wealthy people across this state. You know, we have more than 110 billionaires here in New York State. But more important than that, the way that our tax code is currently set up, it is not one that is quite logical. For example, if we're talking about, you know, the way in which we tax the financial services sector, a lot of our tax code is created in a time when the financial services sector was not as big of a sector in the New York State economy. Or the way in which we tax capital gains versus income, or even the way in which we tax income. You know, for example, if you make $1 million a year or you make $1 billion a year, in New York State, you're going to be taxed at the same rate as an individual. There is no additional progressive tax brackets as you go past $1 million. And even more than that, between $100,000 and $1 million, there are no different categories. So, you know, am I pushing to raise taxes on someone making less than $100,000? No. But in terms of people who are making $200,000 and $900,000, I think those should be different tax brackets. In terms of people making more than $1 million, I think those should be different tax brackets. There are proposals, you know, and I just want to zoom out for a second. We're in the midst of a crisis in our state, a financial crisis, and we're told that there's a budget shortfall of about $14 billion. And there is a proposal with regards to changing the tax code in New York State that would create just about that, if not more money in additional revenue. And so, you know, I would want to say this is one case where Republicans would be correct. There are taxes that I want to raise. They would like to portray this as me trying to raise taxes on someone making 50, 60, 70K, which is not the case. What we need to do is raise taxes on those who have more than enough and should share a little bit more with the rest of the society.
Of course, that would be done by the legislature, which is currently controlled by Democrats in both the Senate and the Assembly. And I think it's fair to say that both the Senate and Assembly are controlled by Democrats who have been in the legislature for quite a long time, sometimes in the case of decades. First, I want to ask you, you're being elected to the Assembly. Will you support Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie in his reelection to that role, or would you like to see a change in leadership in the Assembly?
I plan on supporting any candidate that is consistent with the values that we ran this campaign on. One thing that I'm so excited about is that there's nothing hidden from plain view about who I am and what I want to fight for. I'm not secretly telling everyone I'm a socialist now. This is something we built the campaign around. And so for me, I want to see I want to see a speaker. I want to see a legislature that understands the scale of the crises we have at hand and understands that these crises predated this pandemic. So the solutions have to do more than just patch over things. And that is what I'm excited to support as a member of the Assembly.
All right, Zoran Mamdani, we'll see you up here in Albany next year. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I look forward to being back on.
It's the start of a new month, and that means the rent is due for thousands of tenants in New York. Right now, landlords aren't allowed to evict tenants if they can't pay their rent. And the Trump administration extended that rule through the end of the year this week. That means low-income tenants are safe from eviction until next year. But the rent that they can't pay now will still be due later. Some Democrats want to cancel rent payments altogether for low-income tenants to avoid that debt. But some say that proposal could actually make the state's housing crisis worse. I spoke with Vito Signorelli from the Rent Stabilization Association, a group that represents property owners in New York City. Vito, thanks so much for being here.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Anytime. So you represent a group that represents landlords and property owners. And as you know, and as I know, there is a group of Democrats out there right now pushing the idea of canceling rent, which is a little bit more complicated than it sounds, but essentially tenants would not have to pay rent under this proposal. And there are a few others where some landlords would be reimbursed, others would not. I think it's fair to say that your group, the Rent Stabilization Association, is probably against that proposal. Tell me how it would affect landlords if it went into law.
Well, by way of background, obviously when this pandemic first hit the city, anybody, you know, any worker, any tenant, any property owner, homeowner immediately, you know, would hit the panic button. What am I going to do if I'm not working? How am I going to pay the bills? And, you know, the elected officials' immediate reaction response to that is, well, let's push for a cancel rent movement, which, to be honest, it's not just a matter of not being fair to the property owner, but it's just not financially feasible, because at the end of the day, there's a notion that, you know, landlords, the vast majority of landlords in New York are making money hand over fist, which just isn't the case. You know, the city is composed mostly of small property owners that rely on their monthly rent payments to pay for their vital operating expenses, whether it's property taxes, water and sewer bills, or any other operating expense to keep the building afloat on a month-to-month basis. So even one a month where there's a cancel rent movement, if you think about a building that's composed of only 6 units, you're taking all the income away from that property owner who relies on it. And when this happened earlier in March, building owners were on the verge of owing their property taxes for the upcoming fiscal year. So the cancel rent notion is immediately created panic for owners who weren't sure how they were going to pay these expenses without their rent money.
Right. The big thing with all of this is that everything costs money. And that's part of why the state early on in this froze evictions for tenants that couldn't pay their rent. It's been called an eviction moratorium. It's still going on. I'm really curious about this because so I'm up in Albany. You're down in New York City, obviously. That's where your group represents. How often have we seen tenants not be able to pay rent during this? What are you hearing from landlords on that? I'm wondering if it's common or if it's kind of an exception to the rule right now.
Well, to be honest, it's hit or miss. You know, for some property owners, they might be lucky where their tenants, the vast majority of their tenants may have never lost their jobs. But I can say one thing, it was definitely a lot easier, believe it or not, earlier on in the pandemic when federal unemployment assistance was elevated to $600 additionally per month, which helped substantially. And then there were the stimulus checks that were sent to tenants. So we're kind of stuck in a crossroad right now where there unfortunately are still thousands of tenants who are without jobs trying to figure out how they're going to pay their rent. And the federal assistance has been cut off. You know, we're waiting for Congress to reconvene at some point to try to come to some kind of agreement to help these people who are still unemployed. And the state recently provided a COVID rent relief program where they allocated up to $100 million for low-income tenants throughout the state. And unfortunately, that's ended only because there were a limited amount of tenants who were able to apply for that. And once that $100 million was met, then the program was shut down. But it's our understanding that the state housing agency, everything was able to be flow nicely tenants were helped, and building owners are going to start seeing their subsidy payments through that. So that should help substantially for both the tenants and the property owners.
Do you think that we can get through this housing crisis without help from the federal government? Is there anything the state can be doing to make sure that landlords and property owners can hold on to their properties and keep tenants in those buildings to secure that they actually have a future there?
Well, unfortunately, I wish I had an answer for that, but the budget deficit in the state is much bigger than what we're dealing with in the housing market. I mean, there's small businesses that have shut down that may never come back. And it's not just in New York City, it's throughout the entire state. So we should have an idea in the next couple of weeks about, you know, where the state stands in terms of the budget deficit. We're hoping there is additional funding somewhere down the line to protect the tenants. Unfortunately, it's too early to tell, but we are hoping at some point, whether it's federal assistance to the state or just somewhere deep down, there are state funds that are available that could end up helping these tenants.
All right, Vito Signorelli from the Rent Stabilization Association, thanks so much for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you.
If you're a tenant who struggled during the pandemic or just have a story you think we should hear, let us know. Just head to our website at nynow.org and click the link to tell us at the top of the page. And follow us on social media at nynow_PBS. Until then, thanks for watching this week's New York Now. Have a great week and be well.